Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. It's me, Jackie Cation. I am in my house and speak. It's a ranger at the Dork Forest. Hello. I would like to say hello. I'm a little sleepy, a little pudgy, but with me, Eugene Comic and giant math dork, Sarah Hagen. Also Hacky Sack, if I remember correctly.
Oh, that is correct. Yeah, I think that about covers it. Comic, math,
welcome,
dork,
welcome
into Hacky Sack.
Yes, welcome to the program. It's at Sarah Hagen Comedy, I guess. There was some mocking when she was Comic of the Week on Jackie and Laurie's show, but not here, the Dork Forest, safe space. So it's at Sarah Hagen Comedy, I guess. And then she has a math website, sarahhagen.weebly.com. And they'll both be in the notes. And it's March, and you wanted to talk about pie.
Yes,
which
I did.
A math thing.
It is. I'm such a dork about pie. And Jackie, I was thinking like, yeah, I know you were like, really, we could talk about anything. We could talk about Lord of the Rings or Hacky Sack.
Yeah.
Like, no. I want to talk about a single number for a whole hour. And I probably won't even get to everything I want to say.
I know, because you're going to have to start with like single syllables over here. I failed algebra. So, to my knowledge, is it's one number that describes all circles.
This is already, you already have a head start on a lot of people. Pi is absolutely okay. Related to circles.
Circles, circumference,
all right, maybe failed algebra, but you're passing geometry
diaphragm,
right now. Diameter?
Diameter? There's a good condoms? Diameter. That's what I'm looking for. Diameter. So start wherever you like with pi, and I might send you back in time, and I might need clarification.
Yeah, no, this is great. I was thinking I would just start at the very beginning. So let's talk about how pi is defined. So you mentioned circumference and diameter. Let's start at the beginning. So suppose you have a perfect circle, like the one ring before it was destroyed in the fires of Mount Doom.
Yes.
So, okay. You've got a perfect circle and you draw a line through the center of that perfect circle. That's the diameter.
Okay.
And then
like from edge to edge,
from edge to edge. Exactly. Edge to edge through the center. That's your diameter.
Damn.
And then the distance around the circle, that's called the circumference.
Okay.
But it's really just the distance around.
Right.
And then the number pi is however many diameters you can wrap around the circumference.
Oh, how many times the whole straight line would go around the whole circle part?
Exactly. That is exactly it. That's all that pi is. Yeah. And so if you did it, if you like actually drew a circle and you, you know, maybe took a piece of string and put it through the center and you sort of had a diameter and you start like wrapping it around the circle, you'd see, okay, I can get a little more. I can get three times around and it's a little more. And so then you say, all right, well, how much a little more? Well, let me try half that distance. No, it's less than half, maybe a quarter. Oh, it seems less than a quarter, maybe an eighth. And then it's like, okay, yeah, it's about 3 1/8.
Okay.
And yeah. And this value of pi, 3 1/8, was known, I don't know, do you want to take a guess how long ago that's been known?
It's one of those Greeks, right? It's, was it one of the Greeks?
It is maybe even pre...
Not the theorem guy, right? Not that guy.
It is Pythagoras. Pre-Pythagoras. Pre-Pythagoras, who was in the around 500 BC. So
I once in college took a class called the History of Math and Science, and it counted towards a science credit.
Yes. Oh, that's so wonderful. Oh, man. So I have also taken history of math classes, and I'm a huge dork for the history of math. But yeah, so this value of known about, or value of pi, 3 1/8-ish, that was known maybe as early as 2000 BC.
Okay.
Yeah. We have some ancient tablets, ancient Babylonian tablets, that have 3 1/8 as a value of pi. And I think they're dated somewhere between, I think, 1600 and 1900 BC.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So that's maybe our earliest known value of pi. We also have a very early known value. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Would it
be
1900 to 1600 BC?
It would, yes. Well, yeah.
Thank you. I just, there's a reason why it's called the Dork Forest. I'm a bit of a pedant myself. So let's keep going. Yes.
Okay. So yes, you have, about 2000 BC. Also around this time in, so that was the Babylonians, around this time in Egypt, we have, are you familiar with the Rhind Papyrus?
No.
Okay.
How are you spelling Rhind?
R-H-I-N-D.
Okay.
It's also sometimes called the Ahmes Papyrus, I believe. But anyway, it's this, ancient Egyptian scroll that was found by, I don't know, Rhind is just like some European fellow who like bought it or found it at some point.
Then brought it off into Germany or England or somewhere and claimed that, put his name on it.
Right. But Ahmes is the author of the papyrus. This is around, and I think the papyrus is dated to around 1650 BC. And Ahmes claims that it is actually, he's reproducing work that happened earlier. So again, maybe around 2000 BC. And he has a value for pi that is 3 1/13/81.
Okay, so he went a little
more
specific.
Yes, yeah. And you see that, and instantly you're like, you didn't measure that. Like, so already... there is some theory, 1600 to 2000 years before.
So that's mathematical theory. He couldn't have measured that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think he would have the accuracy, but also like, who's breaking something up into 81 pieces and seeing if you have 13, if like, oh, that little extra thing is 1381 of a...
Right.
It's wild. And so already, this is, you know, almost 3.5, almost 4,000 years ago, people were using theory to try to find the value of pi.
Okay.
And so
what
that's
is
like,
the value of pi?
Ooh. Oh yeah. We haven't even talked about this. Okay. Do you have like any numbers lodged in your mind? Like any for the decimal value?
Well, yeah. I just have the main 3.14.
There we go. Yes. Okay. 3.14. I know a few more.
Sure.
All right, this is just a tangent, but I got a candy bar at a math or at a comedy show. There's a math teacher who was doing a comedy show, and I was in the audience, and he asked for people to like yell out digits of pi. And I think I won.
Eugene, Oregon, ladies and gentlemen, come on down.
Yeah. I think I won. I only know like 18 digits of pi, which is not that many. But like I have a student who knows 1,000 and it takes her like 13 minutes to recite them.
Wow.
It's crazy. But anyway, so 3.14 is all anybody really needs to know. Like maybe 3.1415 if you want to start seeing some patterns and some like weird occurrences of pi that I might have time to talk about later.
Okay.
I think NASA uses 16 digits of pi.
Okay.
And I think if you wanted to know, if you like knew the circumference of the known universe, or maybe you know the diameter of the known universe, and you want to calculate the circumference to within the width of a hydrogen atom, I think you only need like 40 digits of pi.
What? Who's doing that?
That's a great question.
How could you have the known circumference of the universe?
Well, you know, if you...
That's theoretical. This is theoretical math you're talking about,
right? This is just theoretical. Okay. This is just to show that anything beyond 40 is totally for funsies. There's no reason. And like, yeah, and really for any practical purpose, like 3.14 is great.
It's going to... Yeah. And what are those practical purposes?
I mean, pi has... It shows up in a lot of things. Like anytime you have kind of, you know, circular things. It shows up in lots of like volumes of like cones and spheres and things like that. But it shows up in, in like a lot of random thing. I mean, it shows up in Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. It, you know, will show up in...
Heisenberg's uncertainty principle? Just to weed off very briefly.
Yeah. Let's see. It's this, I'm not a physicist, but it is a principle that kind of tells you how much you can know, how much information, how accurate your information can be about different physical properties. And so I think it's momentum and velocity. And I think you can only know one accurately. Like the more accurate you know one property, the less accurate you can be in your measurement of the other one.
Wow.
Yeah. This and so pi shows up. Pi shows up in there.
So math and science, there's some speculative fiction going on here.
Oh, man. Okay. We can depart the history of pi at any point and just jump into weird occurrences of pi in the world. I've got them. I've got a lot.
We can come back to the history. What are weird occurrences? I mean, are they using it in architecture? What are they using it for?
No, yeah. I'm sure they're using it in architecture. I mean, like, I think it's used in like data compression. The fact that we are, when you're like processing signals, you treat them. Oh man, I'm trying to see how I can do this in a way that doesn't just like scare everybody off.
Let me tell you that I don't think you can scare anybody off who has made it 10 minutes into this program. They're just waiting for you to try and scare them off. So you go.
All right.
And I will be the only road bump in your, journey.
All right. Rangers of the Dork Forest, they knew what they were getting into. It does show up because there's this... Basically, okay, so when you have a signal, you kind of think of it as just a function, and you can like kind of graph a function, and you like maybe the sound of my voice, you can like kind of like have a graph that kind of represents a sound signal. And there's this kind of miracle in mathematics that says that any function can be pretty nicely approximated by an infinite sum of trig functions.
Wow.
This is where I'm like, oh man, do people have like trauma around trigonometry? Maybe.
Well, I don't have trauma. I just wasn't good at it, I think it was the year that my glasses broke. So I was sitting in the front of the thing trying to get it, but I didn't get it. So tell me say that sentence again.
Okay.
About signing. Signal.
So any kind of function that you would ever come up with, can be well approximated by just taking sums of sines and cosines. And so maybe let's not even talk about trig functions. Let's just say waves. You've got like wavy functions, and your wavy function can either, you can describe it by like how fast the waves are occurring, like, you know, the distance between the crests, and you can describe it by like how, like the amplitude of the crests. And it turns out that if you just have kind of any weird little function that, if you take enough wavy functions and they have the waves have the right amplitude and the right distance between the crests, and you add enough of them up, you can come up with a sum those, and you have enough terms, and it'll look almost identical to the original function you had. And it's kind of a miracle.
That's using pi.
Wavy functions like sines and cosines, they hit pi is kind of essentially built into them.
How so?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
I have a calculator when I was in high school, and it had a sine button and it had a cosine button, and I never knew when to use either of them. So, not good. Not ideal.
Yeah. Well, it all has to do with the relationship between right triangles and the unit circle.
Okay. And the unit circle, because when I think pi, I think a circle. What's a unit? How do triangles get involved?
Okay. All right. Wow. This is so far afield. So let me see if I can remember all the things. I haven't taught trig in many years, but I can. Let's see. Okay. Can I like share screen and do like share a whiteboard, or should we not do that? This is a podcast.
You can, if it'll allow you. This is Riverside, so I'm uncertain. Oh, you see on the bottom where it says share?
Yeah. Oh, I see. All right.
See if it will.
Let's see. Share a presentation. Do you have a
Just share screen. Do you have that?
Share screen. Yeah. Oh, and then window, entire screen, Chrome tab. I don't want to do any of these.
We could also... tell me to go to a community college near. Okay, issue. What should I do?
I've got an idea. I've got an idea. So I actually do have some slides set up because I've given so many talks on slides or on Pi that I've got.
It says that I would have had to have set this up before to allow you to share this screen. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to tell Jackie to take some community college courses, and you tell me a fun pie story.
All right. Okay. So let's see. Let's see some crazy places that pie shows up. Oh, here. How about this? I want to jump back into the history of pi, because if I jump back into the history of pi, then I will have, there will be some wild occurrences of pi showing up in the history of pi. So we've got the, the rind or Ames papyrus. This gets this weird theoretical value of pi. And then let's jump forward to 250-ish BC with Archimedes. So now we're into like more of my breadbasket, the ancient Greek mathematicians. And Archimedes came up with a good theoretical way of kind of finding pi, finding as many digits of pi as you could possibly want. And it's really clever. It turns out the Rhine papyrus, the scribe Ames, his theoretical value of pi included two fudge factors, which kind of canceled each other out. So it wasn't like he got kind of lucky. But the Archimedes value is theoretically, it will get you pi to as many digits as you want. So this was already known. Pi, like theoretically as accurate as you want, was already known 250 BC. And what he did was he would take a circle, and his idea was draw a hexagon inside that circle, but draw the biggest hexagon you can inside the circle. So you've got a circle and you just inscribe the biggest hexagon you can.
Okay.
And he says, okay, well, a hexagon, we actually know a lot about just regular polygons, and he knows the perimeter of a hexagon. And he says, well, the perimeter of a hexagon, that like is kind of close to the perimeter of the circle. And the diameter, the, you know, length across a hexagon, well, that's going to be the same as the diameter of the circle. And so your first approximation of pi is say, well, okay, just take the perimeter of the hexagon, divide it by the length all the way through. And then do that again. But now let's say double the number of sides. So now instead of a hexagon, we've got a 12-sided polygon.
Okay.
And that's going to look very much like, it's going to approximate the circle much nicer. So you draw the biggest 12-sided polygon in your circle. We can calculate that perimeter. It's more of a pain in the butt, but we can do it. And then you say, all right, well, how many, you know, diameters can I fit around the perimeter of that polygon? Well, that's a little bit more accurate. And you do this so on and so forth. And I think Archimedes ended up calculating the perimeter of a 96-sided polygon.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. And
I take it he had a sponsor. Okay.
This is actually like especially amazing given how garbage the Greek number system was. Like it was so bad. There's a reason
why
pre-zero?
The Greek zero?
Pre-zero. They didn't have zero. They also didn't have what's called a positional notation system like we have, where it's like, okay, we have like, you know, a one, and then that just means one. But if we have like, say, move it over a one and a zero, well, that one means one. We have one group of 10. And if you have 100, that's one group of 100. But they didn't have a positional system like that. It was more like the Roman system of numerals where you've got, where it's like
I's and V's and I's and M's and X's. And
so, right. Exactly. Okay. Except it's actually worse. So it's like the Roman numerals where, okay, for numbers, they've got letters and you just, you know, you have whatever. If you have like, you know, in Roman numerals, like two X's and a V, you just add them up. It's like, okay, that's 10 plus 10 plus 5, you've got 25. So it's the same idea, except instead of, you know, for Roman numerals, I think to get all of the numerals or everything up to 1,000, what you've got I, V, X, L for 50, C, 100, D for 500. So I think you have like six letters to get to 1,000. And the Greeks, you had 27.
To get to 1,000?
Yes. Wow. Yes. I
have to say, first of all, it's very admirable of you to know the Roman numerals system well enough to have dashed off what 1,000 is. I cannot check your work at this time.
Let's hope no one else does either, because I didn't actually look any of that up beforehand.
That was a shot in the dark, you guys. Yeah. Let's all applaud if it's correct. And if it is not, just email me the correct. I'm sure we'd love to know.
I would. Yeah, I would. But it is true that but I did look up because I kind of have, I was like, I think it's so garbage. I think they have like 27 different numerals, and they do. So it's like a different numeral from 1 to 9, and then another different numeral for 10, a new numeral for 20. It's just like, it's so bad. So there's a reason why the Greeks were great at geometry and terrible at algebra.
Okay.
So anyway, so the fact that Archimedes, so yeah, he had a 96-sided polygon, which means, and you have to like extract square roots by hand, which is a giant pain in the butt, especially if you have such a terrible number system.
Yeah.
And he got to pi, he got three digits, he got 3.14.
Already. He did?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he got 3.14 doing that. And so Archimedes's method, was the standard method throughout the ancient world. And it was sort of known like, okay, well, you could get more digits if you had patience and you hated your free time. And so I think came to its natural conclusion around, I want to say like, it's 480 AD in the East. So a Chinese mathematician, Zhu Zhongzhi, I'm sure I'm butchering that, took this to its kind of natural conclusion in the ancient world, calculated that pi was, let's see, how many get, he got 3.1415926. So 8, I guess, digits of pi.
Okay.
Using a 24,576-sided polygon.
Wow. Which, how do you even?
How do you? So you're like, wait, you're not actually doing 24,000. 1,500 calculations. So how is he doing this?
Yeah.
Well, it's you start with the hexagon and then you say double. And so every time you double, that's a new calculation with a new having to extract a square root by hand. And then you double and double and double. And so to get 24,576, you are doubling the hexagon 12 times.
Okay. Now, to make a square, to do a square root by hand, this might be another question that isn't fun for you. How is that different? How do you do that? I mean, the square root of nine is three, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, math is not my strong suit. This is like
a
very painful episode of The Dark Forest where I'm like, try not to appear like you don't know any math. But I can do that, but that's just memorization. And I know why it's that, because 3 times 3 equals 9, and the square root is the thing that is the times itself that equals the thing, right?
Yes, exactly. So you could do square root of 9 because you're like, okay, I know 3 times 3 is 9. But yeah, so actually extracting square roots by hand, we don't even teach it in schools anymore. This is one of the things that's like, we still have people do long division by hand, but we don't have kids do
anyone doing
extracting square roots by hand.
So how would you not do it by hand? Like if I wanted to find out the square root of 112,
I put it into a calculator. There's a button. I just hit the button on the calculator. But you know, I asked you to do the square root of 10 and you couldn't do it by hand, you'd be like, well, 3 times 3 is 9 and 4 times 4 is 16. 10's between 9 and 16. So, okay, it's got to be more than 3 and less than 4. So like, all right, that's your first step.
I could do that.
Yeah. And then you go the next thing down and you're like, well, let me try 3.5 and see, is 3.5 bigger than, squared
I get it.
Bigger
okay.
than 10? So you can like do
so
some
guess and
check.
That's all the Chinese guy in 340 AD is doing.
Yeah. So I'm actually not sure how he did it. I mean, I think he had an abacus. The Chinese did have a positional number system, I believe, which is why he was able to do it. But it was still so painful to calculate that Zhu Zhongxi's value of pi lasted for over 1,000 years.
Oh, really? Everyone was like, close enough.
Good enough. Yeah. Everyone was like, you got it. You win. No one got remotely close. I mean, 1,000 years. We're talking
1300.
Yeah.
1400.
I think the 1400s is when we start to see something new happen with pi. But this is actually kind of amazing that Archimedes' method, and then taking to kind of its logical conclusion in the ancient world, that was it. That was all we had theoretically for pi for until 1400.
Wow.
Yeah. So Archimedes' theory.
And Archimedes' theory before that, it was the Arab guy.
Yes.
The papyrus guy took
his
work.
Yeah. The papyrus guy, Ahmes. And that was, which was fudging. So actually what he did was he assumed that it's actually somewhat similar. I think he inscribed an irregular octagon inside a circle. So he kind of approximated a circle by an octagon and sort of I know the area of an octagon. And we haven't talked about this, but the area of a circle is pi times the radius squared. And so somehow they already knew that.
Squared.
Yeah.
Somehow they already knew that.
They already knew that, yeah. And,
and that is true of every circle, right?
Every
a big
circle
or a small circle. If you take the diameter and you multiply it,
So the radius is half the diameter. So the radius is just go from the center to the edge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There's radius, diameter.
And circumference.
Circumference.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm back. Okay. So what happened in 1400?
I'm so, so glad you asked. So in 1400, let's move to India. There's a lot of reasons why, nothing theoretically happened. I mean, actually, the Guy Brandon episode talked about the burning of the library at Alexandria and the murder of Hypatia, the kind of first truly world famous female mathematician, and all of that. That really kind of there is a Dark Ages in mathematics in the West. But in other parts of the world, mathematics was still thriving. And anyway, so now let's get to 1400 in India. A mathematician named Madhava came up with something like truly new and truly surprising. It's kind of through trigonometry, so through these, like, the idea of, like, triangles, he found an infinite sum that would give you pi. And
what?
So let me talk a little bit about infinite sums. Because there are some wild things that you get. They're like wild infinite sums where you get pi. So an infinite sum is where you just like have a bunch of numbers, like an infinite number of numbers, and you add them all up. And most people's first instinct is to say, well, you get infinity because you're adding an infinite number of things.
Right.
But in fact, if your numbers are small enough, like if they get small enough as time goes by, or, you know, as you add more and more, it's sort of like, think of having a ceiling and you're like, you know, you add one and then you could like add a half and then a quarter and then an eighth. And you just like add smaller and smaller amounts so that you're always adding less than the distance to the like ceiling you're trying to get to.
Wait, this was explained to me. I was cornered once. So somebody said that if you cut something in half and then you cut it in half again and you keep cutting it in half forever, you'll never have all of it. Like you'll never use up all of it or something. Is that an infinite sum or no?
Yeah, so this is related. So probably somebody cornered you because they were excited about Zeno's paradoxes of infinity. I could have easily been that person.
You guys, Sarah Hagen cornered me once.
Yeah.
In between Lord of the Rings and Hacky Sack. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Zeno's paradox, one of his paradoxes of infinity is the idea is like, oh, you want to complete you want to go from point A to point B. And I think the paradox is you'll never get from point A to point B because in order to get from point A to point B, you have to first go halfway. And then you have to go halfway from the halfway point.
Right.
And so you have an infinite number of tasks that you have to complete. There's no final step that you're taking. No single step gets you from that there to the point B because you always have to traverse half the distance. So I think that's the paradox of motion. Like, how do we have motion? But even back in ancient times, people kind of understood this idea that like, well, you can add up a bunch of these numbers. And if they're getting small enough that, yeah, you are going to get a finite number. Like you add up all of the steps. If you could add up infinitely many of them at once, you would get a finite number. You'd get that distance from A to B. So you can do this with, things that aren't distances. So here's what Madhava found. So let's start with one and then minus one third. So, you get two thirds. Add a fifth. Okay, you get a little bit, one, you minus a third, add a fifth, minus a seventh, add a ninth, minus an 11th, add a 13th. So you're kind of like jumping up and down. Yeah. And it seems like if you like graph this out, you would see like, you're kind of like jumping up and down around a certain value.
Right.
That value is pi over 4.
Pi over 4?
Yes.
And does anyone know why?
We know why now. I was like looking this up. I was trying to figure this out just last night even. I was just like, how did he do this? Because like, I can do this with calculus. When I, teach like real analysis or something, I have my students, this is like undergraduate math majors will prove this. In an advanced math class. And I have had, I'll have students prove this. I'm like, Madhava was 250 years before Isaac Newton. How did he do it? And it seems like he was anticipating some portions of integral calculus. Like, I haven't worked through the proof or looked at, like, actually how he came up with it. But it is, like, for those rangers out there who know what I'm talking about, it is the, like the Taylor series for arctangent.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And just came out of, and it's in history, it's out of the blue, and it's pre-calculus.
Yes. But it is definitely anticipating some calculus. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. 250 years. And, you know, like, in India. So just, like, you know, geographically very separated from where,
you know,
we
was.
Think of, yeah, from where we think of, like, calculus, you know, really, like, coming to fruition in Europe during the Renaissance. But this is so truly surprising and so wild and theoretically very different. It's like, we are no longer approximating, you know, a perimeter of a circle with a perimeter of a polygon. Like, this is theoretically very different. So that's in the 1400s.
Right.
And then,
but it was over four. How did it come?
Oh yeah. Pi over four.
Did he know that it was over four? Did he know it was pi over four?
Yeah, he did know that it was pi over four. And it,
so if you divided pi by four,
you get the same number you would get if you added one minus a third plus a fifth minus a seventh. And what's crazy is, like, that's just the odd numbers, right? You're just like, the denominators are the odd numbers. It's
okay.
Minus one over three plus one over five minus one over seven plus one over nine.
Okay. Like, and he kept using odd numbers. He did not use any even numbers.
Okay. There's a reason. It's just odd numbers.
Okay.
If you add up all the fractions of odd numbers and then, you know, switch whether you plus or minus, and there you go.
Yep.
It's bonkers. It's so bonkers.
Okay.
So there was, like, another kind of big jump in 1593 with this French mathematician Vieta, who actually, I think, was completely unaware of Madhava and came up with an infinite product. So it's like a number times a number times a number times a number. And it's like square root of 1/2 times the square root of 1/2 plus the square root of 1/2 times the square root of 1/2 plus the square root of 1/2 plus the square. It's like, it's actually, like, I'm sure this is, like, a literal nightmare for some people, where it's like, you just have an infinite number of square roots and you multiply them together. So Vieta had something along those lines that would, he found, would equal 2 divided by pi. And,
oh
yeah.
So pi over 2.
Well, 2 over pi, I guess. Well, it depends on how, actually, it depends on how you write it. Actually, the 1/2 might be, well, anyway.
Sure.
Either way, you flip the fractions either way. You could get 2 over pi or pi over 2. But yeah, so that's,
I just went with pi over 2 because the guy from India was pi over 4.
I know. Yeah.
That's the only.
Right. And so you could have written it. Yeah. I could have done it that way for the, like, yeah, nice kind of symmetry. So that's 1593 again, before calculus proper, but we're butting up against calculus. And Vieta, kind of what's interesting about his infinite product is that it's the first time in history we've seen any infinite product show up. So it's our first known occurrence of an infinite product, and it shows up in an estimation of pi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we get to the calculus era, sort of like 1600s to 1900s, and then there is an explosion. So suddenly with calculus, which is all about kind of taming infinity, we get loads of infinite sums, infinite products, infinite continued fractions, this actually might be the literal nightmare of some people, where it's like, okay, you have a fraction And it's like, okay, one, you know, one divided by like four or whatever like that. That's your like nice little fraction. But then let's say you've got like one divided by one plus a fraction. So like in your denominator, you have another fraction. And right. You're like, oh, one divided by one plus one over one plus another. So you just like keep nesting fractions inside of fractions.
Yeah. Right.
So there are like these infinite nested fractions that converge to pi that are being found.
This sounds like
this
a nightmare to show your work.
Yes.
You're just like.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a beautiful mind meets Hidden Figures and there's a chalkboard somewhere. Yeah. And yeah.
I think it's Isaac Newton wrote somewhere. Like, I think Isaac Newton, I forget. He found many, I think, you know, he's one of these geniuses where it's like, he accidentally found 16 digits of pi. It was like on along the way to doing something else that like that wasn't even his goal. He was just like found this. Yeah. Like found a way of computing pi pretty efficiently. And then it was just sort of like on a lark was like, I'm just going to like do it for a while. And he actually kind of did it for a long time. He wrote somewhere as he was like, I'm actually kind of embarrassed by how much time I spent doing these calculations.
But there is. Before Isaac Newton, there's what, to 8 decimal points?
He
went to 16?
Yeah. So eight decimal points is, yeah, what we get from the Chinese back in the 400s. And then, yeah, that lasts until, let me see, who's the person that breaks it? So I think Vieta maybe is the one. Oh, no, wait. I think Madhava broke it. There we go. So Madhava, I think he got like 10 or 11 digits.
Okay.
Pi.
In between.
I just don't remember exactly, but I think Madhava was, the first to break it. So almost 1,000 years after Zhu Zhongqi.
Right.
Okay. So he gets 10 or 11. And then, Newton has 16. Probably but what's interesting is like we start getting all of these different theoretical ways to calculate pi, but they're like for a long time not really any faster than Archimedes' polygon method. And so somebody will find a new way to like discover pi in an infinite sum or something, and then they'll like use Archimedes' method to like calculate a few more digits.
Well, this will work, but it turns out that Archimedes' method was more efficient and it was close enough.
Yeah. So, like Madhava series that we have, which is actually more, it's known as the Gregory series, in the West, because this is like, it was rediscovered independently, like 200 years later, in the West. The Gregory series, like this actually is really slow. Like you have to have thousands of terms to even get 3.14.
Wow.
But there are variations of it that end up getting faster. And so then this probably the infinite sum kind of calculating digits of pi by hand really reached its pinnacle in 1853 with this guy, William Shanks. And he might be known for other things, but he's mostly known for having calculated 527 digits of pi by hand.
Wow. And his last name was Shanks.
Shanks. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's also in the calculus era when we finally get a symbol for pi. So the symbol for pi was first introduced in 1706 by some guy that like nobody remembers. His name is William Jones, but nobody knows. Like if you asked like a normal mathematician who wasn't like a history dork, they would maybe like, no, I don't know. They'd
no
probably
idea.
Say
and,
Euler.
And now what you want is with the math symbols is another episode of the Dork Forest, but because where the plus sign came from, where the times multiplication is what the real word is, and then division. Mm-hmm. But pi, of course, is just two stripes and then a curly Q on top, right?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
And it's just shorthand, essentially, all of those symbols.
Yeah. So pi, it's a Greek letter, and it is It was used.
It's an actual Greek letter.
It is a Greek letter.
I did not study Greek.
Okay. So pi is a Greek letter, and it is
Is that why it's called pi? Is that
so? Yeah. So like William Shanks used pi because basically, you know, pi. A lot of these older mathematicians like were new Greek and Latin, and perimeter or the periphery of a circle. You know, it's pi is the ratio of the, if you think perimeter of the circle to the diameter.
Right.
And so P is just for like the Greek word for perimeter, basically.
Okay.
That's how the term pi came to be used. Yeah.
And the symbol pi. Got it. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Fun fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's how we get the symbol pi, although it really wasn't used widely until Leonard Euler, one of the most famous and greatest mathematicians of all time. When he started using it.
When did he start using it?
He was in the 1780s, okay. I think. Oh, man.
The 1700s.
The late 1700s. Okay. He starts getting, like, yeah, Euler. Oh, man, you could do a whole Dork Forest just on Leonard Euler. He was so prolific that after he died, he submitted so many, like, amazing research papers for publication that they were still publishing his backlog 40 years after he died.
40 years?
Yes. He is one of the greats. Like, every mathematician's top five will include Euler. You've got, like, yeah, Euclid, Archimedes, Euler, maybe Ramanujan. It's like Gauss and
it's hard to pick five. It's hard to pick five. That's what mathematicians say.
Yeah. It's hard to pick five, like, favorites.
It's right. I got my top five MCU, but they can change. They can change. Yeah. And then, all right.
So this gets us to the 1700s. The first proof that pi is irrational. So do you remember from, like, you know, back in the day what it means for a number to be irrational?
Oh, I don't. Now that you say that a number can be irrational, I remember someone telling me that a number could be irrational. What does it mean?
So to be irrational is to mean that it can't be written as a fraction of whole numbers.
Oh.
And so
it always has to be a whole number?
Well, no, this is like the kind of weird thing is you think, like, okay, well, we've got numbers. And then you kind of go through your mathematical operations. You can, like, you got whole numbers, you can add them, you can multiply them, you divide them, and division is the fractions. And then you're like, is that everything? And the answer is no, it's not everything. There are numbers that aren't fractions, that are still on the number line, but aren't fractions. That there's just no fraction that can represent it. These are the irrational numbers. And
you got one in your back pocket you could tell me about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, like, pi is a famous one, but the square root of 2.
Oh.
This was actually, so, I mean, man, legend has it, it seems like the Pythagoreans 500-ish BC knew that the square root of 2 could not be written as a fraction. It seems like they knew that back then. Legend has it that, like, the person who proved this was, like, murdered for heresy. I think it's just urban legend, but this is the story.
People felt strongly.
Yes.
There could not be an irrational number.
Yes.
For there to be an irrational number sort of went against God and nature and everything that was good and bright and beautiful. Except for that maybe irrational numbers are good and bright and beautiful in and of themselves.
They are. And what's crazy, the real crazy thing, is that you can prove there are actually more irrational numbers than rational ones. And that's when you're like, almost nothing is rational in the number line. But that's too far afield. There's, like, at least a little bit more history, and I'd love to give one, like, bonkers, like, occurrence of pi in the real world.
About 13, 15 minutes
all right,
here.
I'll lightning round some of this if I have to. So proof that pi is irrational, first proved in 1761. So let's compare that to root 2. So, pi known that it was, like, you know, first, its importance was first known maybe 2000 BC. First proved irrational in 1761, whereas the square root of 2, that was proved irrational maybe in the 500s BC. So, like, the proof that pi is irrational is actually pretty non-trivial. And, yeah, came, you know, over 2,000 years after the proof that root 2 is irrational.
Right.
Then we get the proof that pi is transcendental, which I won't even go into what that means for sake of time, but it's like, it's another, that happens in 1882. So kind of the calculus era, we start to really like get pi nailed down. And then in 1897, have you heard of the Indiana Pi Bill?
No.
Okay. So in 1897, total crank, this guy, Edward Goodwin, proposed to the Indiana legislature that he had found the true value of pi. And that if the Indiana legislature, actually he thought that he had like squared the circle, which is this kind of like ancient Greek challenge, which we now know is not possible. He claimed to have done it along the way. His work implies a value of pi of 3.2. Anyway, he proposed this to the Indiana legislature and said, look, if you legislate that this is a new mathematical truth, I'll let you use it without paying royalties.
What? Wow.
Yeah. And it is garbage. It's just mathematical gibberish.
He's talking to people who know just a little bit about math. And so he might be able to trick them.
So in 1897, the Indiana House passed the bill, legislating among other things that pi is equal to 3.2.
Oh my gosh.
It was then sent to the Senate, and was set to pass in the Senate, except that kind of by accident, a Purdue math professor happened to be at the Capitol.
Chambers?
Yeah. He was at the Capitol, I think consulting on another bill, and heard senators in the hallway discussing like the values of pi. And he was like, I need to know what's happening. And then he found out what was going on. And so then he coached all the senators like, this is the stupidest thing you've ever heard. Like you are going to be the laughingstock if you pass this bill, like you cannot pass it. And so it then ended up dying in committee
stopped it.
Yeah. Well, they didn't vote it down. They just agreed to not
let it die.
They let it die. Yes. So if somebody wants to put it back on the agenda, they can.
Sure.
But I told this to my students last week, and one of my students was like, oh, we should celebrate Indiana Pi Day on March 2nd. Because it
was
3.2.
And we're recording this on March 2nd.
We are.
So it's Indiana Pi Day, you guys.
Yeah. Happy Indiana Pi Day. So that's 1897. So this is, you know, this is just like a fun little pause in the break of like progress of humanity. And then it's like, oh, but there's still crackpots out there. And then there's another massive jump. And this is due to maybe the greatest mathematical prodigy of all time, Srinivasa Ramanujan. Oh man, I hope I didn't like
throw his name into the his name is into the hat. Where's he from?
He is from India, and he is probably the greatest mathematical prodigy of all time. Died very young, but in his brief life, gave us like just opened up branches of number theory that no one ever dreamed of. So I'm going to see. I have a slide. I'm going to just see. I know we've like you'd think I'd learn my lesson, but I'm going to just try to show you the.
Give it a shot.
Yeah. Screen window. Let's see. Oh man, it's not going to work.
It could be the inset picture in the slug.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway,
if you want to pick one,
he has this bonkers count. It's an infinite sum here. I'll say it out loud. So it's 2 times the square root of 2 divided by 9,801. That times an infinite sum where each term is 4k factorial times 1,103 plus 2,600 or 26,390 times k all over k factorial raised to the fourth times 396 times raised to 4k. So for every k, put in a natural number, add them up infinitely, and you get 1 over pi. It is so insane. Like, where are any of these constants coming from? Like, at least you're like, oh, okay, you've got your odd numbers, or you've got, you know, you're like doubling hexagon side, you keep doubling the sides or whatever. But like, why are you dividing through by 9,801? Why are you, where does 26,390 come from? It's so insane. And this is like, what's crazy about Ramanujan is that he would come up with these amazing equations and not have any proofs for them. People thought that he was, it was like, people dismissed him for a long time because they didn't have proofs for these things. And they were so wild that you're like, he's just pulling this out of his butt, right? This is like what you
would
think.
Right.
He, like, for this, I think for these, this equation and a few others that he have, so that infinite sum converges to 1 over pi. And I think when asked about it, he said that his family's Hindu goddess revealed it to him in a dream.
Okay.
And I look at it and I'm like, that makes more sense than anything else. Like,
than wherever else he could have gotten it from.
Yes. So this was in 1910. So still pre-computers. Okay. And it is so fast that, okay, so that's an infinite number. It's an infinite sum. But the very first term already gets you 7 digits of pi.
Oh, wow. And the first calculation
Yeah. So it's like, you know, when we were doing the other infinite sum where it's like 1 minus a third plus it. So it's like, you know, the starting, your very first thing already gives you 7 digits of pi. And then you add one more term, that gets you another 8 digits of pi. And then another term gets you another 8 digits of pi.
So you're at 23 digits?
Yeah. Which is okay. And it is like, I mean, it converges like that. It's so fast that actually our modern computations are the, like, when you hear like, oh, we know trillions of digits of pi, it is based on Ramanujan's formula.
Okay. For pi.
Yes.
Wow.
That he came up with in 1910.
Without anything but an abacus or a pencil.
Right.
And a visit from a Hindu goddess.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So then that takes us up to the computer era. In the computer era, you know, then things change. So in 1949 on the ENIAC, which is like our first kind of like programmable electronic computer, it calculated 2,037 digits of pi. So it's like, now we are off to the races. And, you know, it's just gotten better and better. And at least as of last summer, 202 trillion digits of pi are now known. I think the most recent record, it took 104 days to calculate.
Wow.
I think if you typed it out on paper, that piece of paper would have to be like 10 million miles long. Wow. And remember, 40 is the most you would ever need for even the most like absurdly accurate theoretical calculation. 40 digits is all you need.
Well, because that is my final question for you. I mean, I'm sure you have other stories about pi, but it has been an hour.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This you said it would fly by and it has absolutely flown by.
So because you can have a standardized number like 3.14, mm-hmm. which always works with every circle, mm-hmm. you can then use it theoretically on whatever circle there might be. If something is a circle or if something, but if something like, the Milky Way, is it a, it's not a circle.
Well,
it's it's something else.
Yeah. So Jackie, you're like, you are tiptoeing on the edge of an abyss because, I mean, if you draw a circle, and yes, any circle you draw on a flat surface, no matter how big it is, you're going to get the same exact value for pi. But if you draw on a curved surface, like if you drew circles on the Earth, eventually you draw a big enough circle and you're like, you're going around the Earth, and then you like, you know, you're measuring the diameter is going to be curved. It's going to be, you're going to get a different value for pi because you're doing it on a curved surface. And you might be like, okay, right. Well, that's like, yeah, but in theory, you know, just do it flat. But like space time is curved. And like, and at the center of our galaxy is a black hole. So space time's really curved. So if you drew a circle around this center, around the Milky Way galaxy, and tried to measure the distance through the center, like I said, you're walking along an abyss. I have a whole hour long talk that I've given on, like, I call it more pi, please, on different ways, like ways to get more bigger values of pi if you want them, or smaller values. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have been talking with Sarah Hagen, who does stand-up comedy in addition to other things. Do you have any comedy in Oregon coming up?
I do. I think if this drops on Tuesday...
You can check your Instagram.
Yeah, yep. You can check my Instagram. I think the day this drops, I'm opening for Ben Miller in Springfield at the Wildish Theater. He's a science comedian. He does a show. He's doing a show called Volcano. So I think I have a guest spot there. I'm doing something. I think I'm doing a STEM cabaret show. Like me and my comedy partner in crime, Naomi Fitter, do some STEM vaudeville shows. So anyway, I'm going to be in the STEM vaudeville show at the Prax Theater in Corvallis coming up. Check it out. But yeah, checking my Instagram is probably the best.
There's some math comedy coming up, you guys. It's Sarah Hagen Comedy, I guess. On Instagram, and it's sarahhagen.weebly.com for some math info. And this has been amazing. I really loved hanging out with you when we got to hang. And
me
this
too.
Has been a delight.
Oh, Jackie, I've had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me on the show and for trusting me that I could talk about pi for an hour. And like, I can talk about pi for another hour. So, you know.
Right. I won't record it, but you can. It is a classic conundrum of the Dork Forest where people are like, you put a quarter in me. And I'm like, yes, 1 hour. And it was great.
All right. Thank you so much, Jackie.
You're welcome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was with Sarah Hagen, a very funny comic out of Eugene, Oregon, who has a PhD in mathematics and wanted to talk about pi because it's March.
Right.
I don't know what is math episodes going to be worse than music episodes where I'm just like...
Where you don't know anything at all?
Where I don't know anything at all. And I'm like... Saying the word circumference? Is that the word I'm looking for?
It is.
She was like,
you're talking about pi. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. It was very effective. She had stories.
Yeah.
I had to back her up too far, quite honestly.
Oh.
To the beginning of pi. And then.
Okay.
And then I don't think she got to talk all about the things all she wanted to talk about. She was like, if you were to want to do maybe next year, we could do another episode.
Another pie episode. There's always room for more pie.
If I named these episodes, that would be the name. I may name it anyway. But I will say that it started with, there was a guy in, before Archimedes, there was a couple of guys. There was a guy in India. There was a guy in China.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then there was a guy. There was
They basically both noticed the same thing.
Right. And then in China, there was a way to get to several digits past 3.14.
Oh, okay.
And I, by the end of it, I did under much like cricket. I now understand how pi is found. What I don't fully understand, and I was like, so why is it used? And she was like, well, it's for theoretical math. So right. I do understand that. I mean, I understand that it's like, if you have a theory about the universe, about how big the universe is.
Right.
And so
And there's like, some practical applications for dealing with, like, you know, you're an architect and you want to know how much wood it's going to require to make a...
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah. There's some practical applications, too.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And then she had a great story about in Indiana about some guy who... some bad mathematician who tried to trick the entire legislature, Indiana legislature, into claiming that 3.2 was actually pi and that he would somehow get residuals off of that. And... I don't know.
That's not how any of that works.
Right, right. and then the exciting thing was figuring out pi in Roman numerals versus...
Oh my God, right, because the math is hard in Roman numerals.
Right, because Europe didn't have zeros. They didn't... What did she call it? She called it a fixed number system.
Yeah.
It was all letters.
Right, they were just stand-in for amounts of things.
Yes,
and they hadn't really developed the idea of numbers as mathematics, as just pure mathematics.
Came out of the Arab world, and the papyrus that some guy named Rhind, there's the Rhind papyrus, but she named the actual Arab mathematician.
Oh, good.
It was because Ryan got credit for it just because he found the papyrus, but
oh, right.
Wasn't his idea.
That wasn't his idea.
Yeah. And so there was those stories. The Greek number system, I guess, is even worse than the Roman number system.
Okay.
It took something like 23 or 26 letters to explain pi.
Good Lord. Wow. All right.
And then people used the Chinese system for like hundreds and hundreds of years. And then guy in 1910 in India came up with another thing.
Okay.
People who are into theoretical math, that's a real deep dive into some dorkdom there.
Oh, yeah. But it's really fascinating. There's all kinds of really cool stuff you can do with theoretical math.
Name one. Just offhand.
Klein bottles.
Okay.
A Klein bottle is a bottle where the inside surface is also the outside surface.
Okay. Yes. Boy, did my head hurt by the end of this episode. I loved it. I loved it so. And
sounds
great
to me.
And she's a great comic. I think people will love it. I think so. Rangers are be completely on board. But it was a great episode. and that's all I got. So, Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?